Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, miles out of the 12th Hour. In the Elven, Texas, today is May 4, 2024. It is the 26th day of Ziv 2028. We will start our first service on the Sabbath day with a song, and then I will have a prayer thought taken from Matthew chapter 6. And we're going to then go into our regular study taken from Shepherd God, the volume 4 book by V.T. Holler. We're in the temple types, the literal and spiritual distinction between the two temples. The first and second temple type and another type, V.T. Holler. We're on page 59 of the Shepherd God. Okay, it says in the number 2 Shepherd God, in volume 2 of the Shepherd God, we're on page 495. Anyway, let us go ahead now. It says the Apostle Paul speaking comparatively of the Solomon's temple with the church points unto Yahshua as the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together, he says, is for an habitation of the Yahweh through the Spirit, Ephesians 2:20-22. For the David looking prophetically forward unto the construction of the first temple by his son, and also of his application for the church of Yahshua, said, for the stone which the builders refused has become the headstone of the corner. This is the Yahweh's doing. It is marvelous in our eyes. Psalms 118:22-23. For speaking of the ancient temple, the scripture says, and the house, when it was in the building, was built of the stones made ready before it was brought thither, so that there was neither a hammer, nor axe, nor any tool of iron heard in the house while it was in the building. 1 Kings 6:7. For a peculiar stone, which was prepared for the fitting into the main corner of the temple, was disallowed. And though the builders refused the headstone of the house, the psalmist says, this is the Yahweh's doing. It is marvelous in our eyes. By the refusal of the stone, the Yahweh typified, or the Yahshua typified, the Son, and thus prophesied the rejection of, let's do it again, by the refusal of the stone, the Yahweh typified and thus prophesied the rejection of his Son Yahshua by the Jewish nation. See the Acts 4:10-11. For the Asher says, the stone which the builders rejected, the same is become the headstone of the corner. Matthew 21:42. Therefore, if it has become the head of the corner, then it is evident that the first temple was a representation of a spiritual house and a type of the apostolic congregation of the New Testament, For Yahshua himself was represented by the chief cornerstone that the builders refused as being both the head and the founder of the apostolic congregation of the New Testament. For the second temple and the erecting of the second temple, Haggai and Zechariah, with the prophesying and with the strengthening of the hands of the people by the word of the Yahweh. For the writings of the both prophets bear evidence in every line that the perfect fulfillment of their prophecy is to be realized in the last days of this world's history, as they have interwoven these predictions with the construction of the second temple. It is obvious that the literal model of the stately edifice has a spiritual meaning for the church in the closing work of the teaching of the plan of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20, by his blood, that is to say. And Zechariah looking forward unto the time of the spiritual temple as the last section of the house of Israel, and its construction says, behold the man whose name is the branch, and he shall go up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of the Yahweh. Now that's the son of Yahweh, Yahshua. So he's going to come in these last days, called the second advent, and he's going to rise up out of his place where he comes to, and he's going to build the temple of the Father Yahweh. Even he shall build the temple of the Yahweh, and he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne. So Yahshua is going to build this temple, and his throne is going to be in this temple. And it's called the second temple, and the Antitype. This is a glorious temple. This is that second brass mountain mentioned there in Zechariah 6. There's two brass mountains. The second one belongs in our day, the last day, representing the kingdom of glory that is restored here in these last days. And he shall be a priest upon his throne. And he's not only going to be he's going to sit and rule like a king, but he's going to also be a priest upon his throne. Whereas before, and when he stood before Yahweh as the Father's throne, as an advocate for mankind's sins, until the time when that is over, then Yahshua rises up, and then he builds a temple, he sits up his throne on it, and he sits upon it as a king and a priest. And they that are far off shall come. And the council of peace shall be between them both. Okay. And they that are far off shall come and build in the temple of the Yahweh. And you shall know that the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, is of the host, has sent me unto you. Zechariah 6:12-15. Okay, it says that he shall bear the glory, and Yahshua belongs the glory of the redemption for the fallen rose. Unto him that loved us and washed us from our sin in his own blood, unto him be glory and dominion forever and ever. Revelation 1:5-6. So Yahshua is going to rule forever and ever throughout eternity over his people that he has redeemed from this earth by his blood. He shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne, Zechariah 6:13. For Yahshua, who is as the faithful witness, and as the first begotten of the dead, and as the prince of the kings of the earth, Revelation 1:5, will be a priest upon his own throne. For it is obvious that the time predicted is sometime after the crucifixion and before the probation has closed in the last 12th parabolic hour of this earth's history. For he is a priest, Yahshua, as the branch, and shall grow up out of his place. That is, he is to spring up from the Jewish nation, and he shall build the temple of the Yahweh, his father. Therefore, the temple that he shall build could not have been the literal temple in the ancient Jerusalem, for it was a temple that he is to build after his birth. And they that are far off shall come and build in the temple of the Yahweh. And this was untrue with the literal temple, the words must apply unto the antitypical one. At that time, for the prophet says, and many nations shall be joined unto the Yahshua in that day, and shall be my people. Zechariah 2:11. In that day, that is in the time of the large cry of the third angel's message, and the judgment of the living time now, a great multitude shall be converted unto the purified house of spiritual Israel, with 144,000, as the prophet's Christian sings, first fruits harvest, sitting upon 12 thrones, ruling with Yahshua and Zechariah 13:8, it is stated that one third of the inhabitants will come, and they are the ones who shall build in the temple of the Yahweh, of which the literal one was a type. So we're going to have a third, okay, a lot of people. Zechariah then saw the powers that had scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem, the type, also the antitype, symbolized by the four horns. Immediately after he saw the same horns as the four carpenters, read Zechariah 1:18-21, representing the agencies used by the Asherah in the restoring of his people and the house of his worship, both in the type and antitype, that is, the Gentiles who scattered the church shall also come and build the same literal and spiritual distinction between the two temples. Okay, that's the subtitle for the continue on our subject. For the religious services in both temples were executed in the same manner, but in the structural magnificence, both internal and external, Solomon's temple, comparatively speaking, was by far the greatest, but the Yahweh, by the mouth of the Haggai the prophet, as those who were then engaged in the construction of the house of Yahweh, who is left among you that saw of this house, that was Solomon's temple, in her first glory. And how do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing? For the glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former, saith the Yahshua of the host. And in this place will I give peace, saith Yahshua of the host. Haggai 2:3-9. For the literal grandeur of the second temple, and the comparison with the first, was as nothing. But the word says, the glory of this latter house shall be greater than the former. Literally, this was untrue. Therefore, the glory of these two temples in the comparison with each other. And actually, I want to back up here. I think we need to straighten out something he said. For the glory of this latter house shall be greater than the former. And then he says, literally, this was untrue. But you can't say that. If the latter is greater than the former, you're going to have to say, literally, this is true. Therefore, the glory of these two temples in the comparison with each other is not in the literal or visible form, but rather in the typical spiritual standard. Consequently, both temples cannot typify the same period of the apostolic era of the New Testament, for the one distinctly differs from the other. Since this is true, then the type shows that the apostolic congregation of the 12 apostles of the Nazarene Creed in this instance is divided into two sections. So then, in the type, the second temple denotes that the latter section of the house of Israel temple is to be by far the greater. And that's the temple we represent today, looking to bring forth 144,000 as the first fruits harvest of the Adventist church to be the ones that sits and rules upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel first and foremost, and then all of their Gentile brethren that are at hand to come in. And to the everlasting kingdom, that's in Isaiah 66:16-20. That in the comparison, the former stands as nothing. For these two sections of the church's history was also pointed out in the vision on the Patmos. And to John was shown the true spiritual church of the Yahweh in all ages, and a symbol of a woman. Unto her were given two wings of a great eagle, as she should fly into the wilderness for 1260 days or years. The wilderness represents the Dark Ages, at which time she was out of the civilization from 538 A.D. to 1798 A.D. Therefore, this prophetic period of the 1260 years split the true church and the two sections, namely from the crucifixion of 538 A.D. and from 1798 A.D. until the end of time. Thus, the first section, or as it is called, the Apostolic Congregation of the Nazarene, was typified by the first temple, and the last section by the second temple. This is not saying that Yahweh had no true people between the years of 538 A.D. and 1798 A.D., for the word says, she is nourished for a time and time, and a half a time. Revelation 12:14. For the lesson taught here is that the first section of the church in the first few centuries was endowed with the true Sabbath, with the day, and the sanctuary tree, by the practicing of the animal sacrifices. But prior unto 538 A.D., the truth was trodden underfoot, Daniel 8:12-13. For the second section after the fulfillment of the 1260-year period, you notice that she was again to be endowed with the truth that was cast onto the ground, and the reformation between these two sessions from 538 A.D. to 1798 A.D. of the spiritual house of Israel, or this woman, was to prepare the way for her return, for the restoration of the truth, for both temples by which these two sections were typified represent a worship with the Sabbath and the sanctuary truths that's all listed in Leviticus 23, verses 1 through 44, starting with the seventh day Sabbath as the first Sabbath. Then you have the monthly Sabbath, the new moon, and then you have the annual Sabbath, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the Feast of the Tabernacles, and the Pentecost. Okay, and then first you have your weekly Sabbath, and that's in the first of Luke 23, starting with verse 1. First temple literally greater, but the second spiritually. Okay. There is something glorious with the both temples, and the greatness of the one was as nothing in the comparison with the other. For the first visibly exceeded the second, and the second spiritually exceeded the first, but the glorious gift for the both was unsurpassable, as the one represents the early apostolic congregation of the Nazarene, and the other as the last section of the same temple of Israel. For it is evident that both of the sections were endowed with the great glory, but the glory of the early congregation of the apostles was little, and of the latter spiritual according unto the types. There was something glorious with both temples, and the greatness of the one was nothing in the comparison with the other. For the first had visibly exceeded the second, and the second spiritually exceeded the first, but the glorious gift under both was unsurpassable, as the one represents the early apostolic church, and the other as the last section of the same congregation of Israel, or temple of Israel, where it is evident that both sections were endowed with the great glory, that the glory of the early building of the temple was little, and of the latter spiritually according unto the type. So the early apostolic congregation was literally greater, because Yeshua, as the headstone of the corner, appeared at that time in his visible human form. Thus the literal magnificence of the Solomon's temple was a perfect symbol, but the type revealed that the glory of the early apostolic congregation was as nothing in comparison with the latter section of the same congregation. Therefore, or the same temple, therefore the visible presence of the Yeshua in his human form and the early apostolic congregation was as nothing in comparison with his invisible presence and the closing work of the gospel, or the teaching of the plan of salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant, the blood of sprinkling of Yeshua, Hebrews 10:19-20, and chapter 12, verse 18-24. When we think of the wonderful miracle of the casting out of the devil, the healing of the sick, and the raising of the dead, we marvel as we think of his resurrection, ascension, and of the glorious demonstration on the day of the Pentecost, that all these wonders will be as nothing and the comparison with the divine manifestations of the greater splendor and the harvest time. Let us not suppose that when the Yeshua appeared in the clouds, the infirmities of the saints are to be removed. This work must be done previous unto that time. After which the immortality shall be granted. For he that believeth in me, the works that I do, said the Yeshua, shall he do also, and greater works than these shall be he do. John 14:12. For the perfect fulfillment of these words are yet future and must be fulfilled before his second advent. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying, that it is written, death is swallowed up in the victory. 1 Corinthians 15:53-54. Therefore, in the time of without trial, that's during the 12th day of body killed, judgment of the living time, miracles are wrought, the sick will be healed, the eyes of the blind shall be opened, the deaf shall hear, the tongue of the dumb loosed, and the lame shall leap for joy. What a glorious sight. Those who have never seen light, to behold the glory of the Yahshua, they who have never heard a sound, now listening for the glorious melodies of the angels' harps and the singing of the saints, what a thrill, what bliss, and Yahweh shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Revelation 21:4. Behold, I will show you a mystery. For we shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. 1 Corinthians 15:51-54. As the living saints witness the dead of all ages rising from the dusty bed, it will bring joy indescribable then to behold friends and loved ones as they meet each other, clothed in their glorious incorruptible bodies, marching through the space via the sinless planet, and finally into the heaven of the heavens. What a glorious train of the immortal beings, saints and angels, and the King of Kings, the Yahshua of the host, as the everlasting, with the everlasting Father, and as the Prince of Peace, in the midst of them, swiftly flying from the sin-cursed earth to the center of the sinners in but 7 days, while it would take light millions of years to make a trip of such incomprehensible distance, and you perceive of an object moving with such tremendous velocity. But yes, Yahweh forbid that we should rob ourselves of the glory like this. For an hour's time lived in the heaven without sin, pain or tears, fear or death, is worth more than 1,000 years in the tents of their wickedness. My brethren, for the obeying of the word of Yahweh and for the being true unto the principle for your own good is not asking too much of you. Will you let the self and sin rob you of a crown of the life? Your human wisdom and worldly knowledge will prove to be as black as darkness itself if you should allow the wily foe to rob you of the celestial bliss that should be yours throughout the ceaseless ages of eternity. Though the early apostolic congregation suffered terrible persecution, she prospered wonderfully, for the 3,000 converted on the day of the Pentecost, as such as should be saved, was marvelous for the beholding, verily for the speedy growth of the first section of the apostolic congregation or temple, and the comparison with the second and last is to be as nothing according unto the type. Therefore, the saint is proven by the prophet, or the prophetic word of Yahweh, through the prophet Zechariah, and as the prediction was interwoven with the construction of the second temple, or with the type of the second section of the church, of which we speak at this particular time, the application of the following scriptures must be correct. Sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for lo I come, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, saith Yahshua, and many nations shall be joined unto the Yahshua in that day, and shall be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of thee. Zechariah 2:10-11. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come for the seeking of the Yahshua of the host and Yahrushalem, that is, the purified church without the reference to location, and to pray before the Yahweh, Zechariah 8:22. Therefore thy gates shall be opened continually, they shall not be shut day nor night, that men may bring unto thee the forces, and the margin means the wealth of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought, Isaiah 60:11. And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith Yahshua, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein, and I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. For they shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, yes, Yahweh is my father. Zechariah 13:8-9. What is the 3,000 converts in the day in the comparison unto the one-third of the people saved of this present generation gathered in Durham the last hour in the last parabolic hour, the 12th hour that we're in now of the probationary time. Truly then it can be said, for the glory of the first temple, our first section of the apostolic congregation was as nothing in the comparison with the second apostolic congregation, for the last section of the apostolic congregation in the time of the loud cry is indeed in the harvest time and in the beginning of the end of the world and the 12th parabolic hour, starting the judgment of the living with 144,000 as the first fruit harvest of that judgment and harvest for the early apostolic congregation of the 12 apostles was a converted righteous congregation. And nevertheless, the tares and the wheat were to grow together until the latter harvest in the last day, Matthew 13:30. For this, these words until the harvest cannot be mistaken. Therefore, at the commencement of the harvest, the separation takes place. Thus, the church in the time of the Lord God is to be a pure and holy congregation without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, a church without guile. If the foregoing statement is correct, then the same must be found in the prophetic word of Yahweh. My brethren, I beg of you, hear the voice of the good shepherd. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city, for henceforth, that is from now on, there shall no more come unto thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. Shake thyself from the dust, arise and sit on thy throne, O Jerusalem. Loose thyself from the bands of thy neck, O captive daughter of the Zion. Isaiah 52:1-2. As these words are so plain, how can we doubt our mission's true meaning? For it must be that the congregation of the Yahweh is asleep in the dust. Thy Yahweh is calling thee, O Zion, Yahweh's congregation, as the only object on the earth upon which he bestows his supreme regard, is in captivity. She is bound by her neck unto men of the good words and fair speeches. Hear the words of the Yahweh of Zion. Arise and sit on thy throne, for thou shalt judge nations. Why make flesh thy arm? Is not thy Yahweh able to save thee? Is not the word of thy Yahweh quick and powerful, sharper than a two-edged sword, and piercing even unto the divine, the son of the soul and spirit, and a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart? For the Zion's sake will I not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as the brightness, and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. My brethren, go through the gates. Prepare ye the way of the people. Cast up the highway. Gather out the stone. Lift up the standard for the people. Isaiah 62:1-10. It says, for the remnant of the Israel, represented by the 144,000, shall not do iniquity. That's the first fruits of the harvest out there in the church, starting the general living. Nor speak lies, neither shall deceitful tongue be found in their mouth. For they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. Isaiah 3:13. In that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses those that shall carry the gospel or the plan of the salvation of the brother everlasting covenant of Yahshua unto all nations, holiness unto the Yahweh, and the pots in whose possession is filled with the truth, present truth, and the Yahweh's house shall be like the bowl before the altar, pure and undefiled. Yea, every part in Jerusalem, of the congregation, and in Judah. Okay, every part in the 10-tribe church of the north, of Ephraim, and in the Judah, the 2-tribe church in the south, the leading part of the church shall be holiness unto Yahshua those, and all they that sacrifice by the offering shall come and take of them and seed, that means to boil therein, for they also, for they who administer in this, they who administer in the sacred thing. And in that day there shall be no more of the Canaanites unconverted in the house of Yahshua the host. Zechariah 14:20-21. This is the congregation that is represented in the Revelation 12:17, which keep the commandments of the Yahweh and have the testimony of the Yahshua. For the pure woman, it represents the church as a body, as a remnant of her seed, and as the 144,000 against whom the dragon makes a war. This war is waged against them because they are in the earth, as the earthly leaders and founders of the movement. All her seed signifies that they are part of the woman, or in other words, the 144,000. And the great multitude is but one movement, one family. For the saints of this holy temple, the benediction of the pronounced, blessed are they that do his commandments, and they that they may have a right unto the tree of life, and that they may enter in through the gates into the city. Revelation 22:14. So he says, for the Jacob as the father in the type of Israel, the true dream on the day that the Pele Aram, and behold, a ladder stood up on the earth, and the top of it reached into heaven. And behold, the angels of Yahweh ascending and descending on it. And he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place! This is none other but the house of Yahweh, and this is the gate of the heaven. Genesis 28:12-17. For the Jacob's dream was prophetic of a time when there will be a complete connection and constant communication with the heaven and earth. The large cry of the third angel's message, the harvest time, and to that glorious church these words apply. This is the house of Yahweh and the gate of the heaven. Only by the gospel or the teaching of the plan of salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20, that is, through his blood, by his blood, proclamation through that spiritual house can Yahweh save his people. There is to be one foe, one shepherd, one Yahshua, one truth to embrace, one salvation to accept, one road to travel, one gate to pass through, one train to take, and one time to depart, one heaven to enter, one people, and one only family. There shall be no other way. It is impossible to give any idea of the experience of the people of the Yahweh who shall be alive upon the earth when the celestial glory and a repetition of the persecutions of the past are blended. They will walk in the light proceeding from the throne of the Yahweh by the means of the angels. There will be a constant communication between heaven and earth. Testimonies for the Church Biology, White, Volume 9, page 16. For the time for the building of the antitypical temple, that is the church, this is a subtitle for our last section that we're studying today, we partially explain that the two literal temples successfully built in the ancient Jerusalem were the types of the two sections of the antitypical apostolic congregation of the New Testament, for the wide literal and the spiritual contrast of these two typical structures was explained comparatively with the type and antitype. Though we should have greatly enlarged on the subject, we have eliminated excessive reading by the briefly stating the facts and endeavoring for the pointing out of a more comprehensive pen picture of this most vital lesson for the New Testament believers and the present truth of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua. For the question before us is, when will the antitype meet the perfected fulfillment? In the preceding paragraph, it was explained that that section of the apostolic congregation ended in 538 A.D., and the second must commence after the 1798 A.D., and at that time the woman is supposed to return from the wilderness. For a close study, CLOS, for a close study of the type is with the only possible way for the clearing of the present truth, not only of the foregoing question, really also of the following ones. If a woman is to return from the wilderness and to the vineyard, that is the civilization, after the end of the prophetic period of the 1260 years, what transpired started in 1798 to prove that she came back in that year, as the imprisonment and the death of the Pope answers one side of the question and clears the end of the prophetic period. Where is a sign for the showing that the woman returned from the wilderness. If the accepted interpretation of the woman is a symbol of the purified congregation of Israel, and if she was in the wilderness from 538 A.D. until 1798, what about the four great denominations that were raised up prior unto that time, namely the Martin Lutherans, the John Knox's Presbyterian, the John Wesley's Methodists of England, and Alexander Campbell of the Baptist Church of England. were they not the woman, the church? For the Bible students have failed for the current of this mystery because of the lack of the light on the word of Yahweh. For grace searchlight by the power of the Spirit shining through the types is the only medium that can remove the obstruction and clear the way for an understanding of these and many other mysteries that are considered incomprehensible and that baffle the human mind. Therefore, the temple type of the purified congregation, represented by the woman, is as the only channel by which these questions can be answered. For the temples and the woman represent the purified congregation as a body, or in other words, as a symbol of the woman is with a revelation of the type temple, and the temples are symbolical prophecies of the woman church. It will be noticed that the separate members of that church are represented by the composite substance of the temple as a living stone, are built up as a spiritual house and holy priesthood for the offering up of the spiritual sacrifices acceptable unto Yahweh by the Yahshua. 1 Peter 2:5. So, we being many, are one body in the Yahshua, and every one members one of another. Romans 12:5. In whom all the building fitly framed together groweth unto an holy temple in the Yahweh, Ephesians 2:21. Therefore, these two temples represent both the purified congregation of the Old and New Testament, and Yahshua, nor of the New Testament. Therefore, these two temples represent both the house of Israel, spiritual house of Israel, and Yahshua. For Yahshua, as our high priest, is prefigured by the chief cornerstone, and his priestly administration by the ceremonial or the sanctuary service of these two literal temples. For the earthly sanctuary service for the salvation of the human race, and the types and symbols reveals Yahshua's administration in the heavenly, which was made up of the two laws, namely the Ten Commandments and the ceremonial laws. The tables of the Ten Commandments were put in the ark, and the ceremonial or the law of the Moses was placed in the side pocket of the ark on the outside. See Deuteronomy 10:2, 31, 26. Why two laws? For the moral law points of the Ten Commandments points out the sin. For by the law is a law of the Ten Commandments is the knowledge of sin. Romans 3:20. For where no law is, there is no transgressions. Romans 4:15. Verily, the ceremonial law was added because of the transgression by the Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Till if seed should come unto whom the promise was made. Galatians 3:19, which is the remedy for the healing of the sinner and for the setting him free from the condemnation of the Ten Commandment moral law. And the Yahshua, the seed, came, he took this law of the ordinance, the law of the ceremonial service of the sanctuary of the Moses, that he set as a type in the wilderness, after he came down out of Mount Sinai to build the first temple there in the wilderness, out of the way, nailing it unto the cross. Colossians 2:14. For the earthly administration of the law of the ordinance could not give life of itself, because it was only a shadow of the truth. Therefore, at the crucifixion of Yahshua, it ceased, and the heavenly one, which was foreshadowed by the earthly, began the literal sanctuary. The service of the both temples were identical. Therefore, these two temples are types of the two sessions of the New Testament apostolic congregation, with the antitypical sanctuary service made up of these two laws, Ten Commandment moral and the ceremonial law of the sacrificial system. For the first section of the apostolic congregation, from the crucifixion until about 538 A.D., was endowed with just such a sanctuary. That is, they had a perfect knowledge of the work in the heavenly unto that time, and their faith corresponded with the service. But in 538 A.D., the faith of this divine administration was thrown out from the purified congregation of Israel, and as Daniel puts it, trodden under the foot, Daniel 8:13, and substituted by a pagan priesthood with the pagan ceremonial and moral laws of the papal service and Sunday worship. Therefore, as the first temple typified the first session of the early apostolic congregation of the New Testament with the apostles, with the 12 apostles, with the faith and a true sanctuary service, just so the second temple that we represent today is the house of David, tribe of Judah, lawgiver, thou shalt sit upon the throne of this second temple, has prefigured the last section of the same congregation with the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, and a sanctuary service that would be identical with the first. And part one of the two temples services, type and antitype. We're going to close now with a song.